We've covered a lot of ground so far in our discussion. Just by way of quick review, we've noted that there is a distinction between making a judgment call about something, that is, making a personal determination based on the objective evaluation of information, and passing judgment, that is, condemning or declaring definitively, specifically about another, whether that's another person or another thing, that it is sin, that it is not right with God, that it's in opposition to Him. And whereas we're instructed, when we are instructed to exercise good judgment in making decisions for ourselves, that is, making judgment calls or formulating informed personal opinions about things, we consistently saw that that's something we should always be doing all the time. However, when it comes to judging another, that is, making a determination, for example, about the authenticity of another's faith, that is, asking and trying to evaluate whether or not they are a genuine disciple of the Lord versus maybe a false prophet or a false teacher, that discussion seems to be limited more to questions of fellowship. So I make those judgment calls about somebody in regards to, am I going to have fellowship with them or not? And additionally, we saw last week that when it comes to actually passing judgment against another, that is, definitively declaring one to be in sin, oftentimes accompanied by a punishment or a discipline that is administered in an effort to win that individual back to the Lord, we saw that that passing judgment is limited to not only clear violations of God's explicit instruction, but also it's limited to one another, that is, our brethren. In other words, we're not supposed to go around judging outsiders in that way. God will take care of that. Our job is to share the gospel and to point people to Christ in a loving, patient, and gentle manner. But of particular interest to me, and really what prompted me to begin this study, is that while some passages in the New Testament indicate, whether by implication or maybe by a direct statement or an example, that we are to judge or pass judgment against one another in this way, there's even more scriptures that expressly prohibit us from judging one another. Or they explicitly instruct us, do not judge one another. Well, which is it? Are we to judge one another, or are we to refrain from judging one another? There seems to be on the surface there a little bit of a contradiction. But is there really a contradiction here? Well, if you believe that the Bible is inspired, that it's from God, God doesn't contradict himself, so there can't be a contradiction. And what I've seen oftentimes in my experience is that in order to harmonize these what appear to be opposing teachings, judge one another, but don't judge one another, what ends up happening is that all of the passages that specifically prohibit judging one another are interpreted or caveated with the one clear passage that says we are to judge one another. So in other words, when we read, for example, Matthew chapter 7 and verse 1, judge not that you be not judged, we're real quick to say, but that doesn't mean you never pass judgment against somebody, because Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 12 to judge one another. Even though it may be a true statement to say, well, he can't mean never judge ever, what we rarely do is come back to the text in question and say, well, then what does it mean? What is Jesus driving at there? What is the point? And so this morning I want to discuss with you three key texts related to this prohibition against judging one another, and ask ourselves, what does the Bible really say about judging one another? The first text I'd like to look at with you is in Romans chapter 14, verses 1 through 13. And since this text may not be familiar to all of us, I want to take the time to just read these 13 verses together, and then we'll go back and make some observations about them. So start with me in Romans chapter 14 and verse 1. Paul says, "Now accept the one who is weak in faith, but not for the purpose of passing judgment on his opinions. One person has faith that he may eat all things, but he who is weak eats vegetables only. The one who eats is not to regard with contempt the one who does not eat, and the one who does not eat is not to judge the one who eats, for God has accepted him. Who are you to judge the servant of another? To his own master he stands or falls, and he will stand, for the Lord is able to make him stand. One person regards one day above another, another regards every day alike. Each person must be fully convinced in his own mind. Now he who observes the day observes it for the Lord, and he who eats does so for the Lord, for he gives thanks to God. And he who eats not for the Lord, he does not eat and gives thanks to God. For not one of us lives for himself, and not one dies for himself. For if we live, we live for the Lord, or if we die, we die for the Lord. Therefore, whether we live or die, we are the Lord's. For to this end Christ died and lived again, that he might be Lord of both the dead and of the living. But you, why do you judge your brother? Or you again, why do you regard your brother with contempt? For we will all stand before the judgment seat of God. For it's written, as I live, says the Lord, every knee shall bow to me, and every tongue shall give praise to God. So then each one of us will give an account of himself to God. Therefore, let us not judge one another anymore, but rather determine this, not to put an obstacle or a stumbling block in a brother's way." Now, as we begin to look at this passage here, this text, we need to identify the people that are being discussed here. And for sake of our discussion, we're going to refer to them as the weak and the strong. I know the strong doesn't actually occur in this text, but if you go down to chapter 15 and verse 1 at the end of this discussion, he talks about those who are strong ought to bear the weaknesses of those without strength. And so we'll refer to the two individuals in this discussion as the weak and the strong. Well, who exactly are the weak and the strong? Well, it's very important to note that weak and strong in this context does not equate to wrong and right. It does not equate even to ignorance and knowledge. In fact, the weak simply signifies here the one who feels that they are at liberty to do less. They are more restrictive in their actions. They're the ones who eat only vegetables, or the ones who do not honor a certain, or rather, the ones who honor a certain day. The strong, on the other hand, signifies the one who feels at liberty to do more. They are less restrictive in their actions. Verse 2, the one who has faith, the stronger one, he eats all things, meat and vegetables alike. He honors all days. He observes them for the Lord. And so the question then is not a question of right and wrong, because the reality is that both are right with God in this section. These are areas of what we call liberty. That is, no one in this section, the weak and the, nor the strong, is doing something that God prohibits them from doing. Nor are they failing to do something that God says you must do. In these areas, God has simply said, you can do what you would like. You know, sometimes we like to think about everything and we like to divide everything up into black and white, where there's a clear line of distinction between the two. And you're either right or you're wrong, you're in or you're out. And it's really clear and easy sometimes we could say, oh, you've overstepped the bounds, you've crossed the line. But the reality is, guys, is that the line, if there is a definitive line, looks much more like this. There's shades of gray. Not everything is black and white. Not everything is cut and dry. And in fact, God has given us an area in which he said, I don't really care what you do here or how you do it exactly. And that's what I refer to as the gray area. Now, this happens whenever God tells us to do something, but does it specifically tell us how to do it, or when to do it, or where to do it? So, for example, in Matthew chapter 28, verse 19, when he says, go, therefore, and make disciples of all nations, he tells us very generically to do something. Go and make disciples. But he doesn't tell me when to go. He doesn't tell me the mode of transportation that I need to use. He just said, go. And so whether I go by plane, whether I go by train, whether I go by donkey, whether I go by foot, God doesn't really care as long as I'm going to share the gospel. You know, there are other instructions that God gives us that are kind of vague. God tells us, for example, that he wants us to be good stewards of the things that he has entrusted to us. How do I do that? What does that look like exactly, God? Well, he doesn't tell us exactly what that looks like. He doesn't say that if you're going to be a good steward of money, you have to follow Dave Ramsey's budgeting process and all of that kind of stuff, right? That's one tool that you could use, but that's not the only way that it can be done. That's not the only way to be a good steward of your finances. He's given us some leeway. The area is gray. He says, do this thing, and how you do that specifically, that's up to your judgment. And I want you to exercise some good judgment in those areas and make a determination for yourself on how you are going to do that thing. And then let me suggest to you that in addition to that, there are simply some areas where God just doesn't care. He is totally indifferent about what we do. Here seems to be one of those. What kind of a diet are you going to have? Are you going to be a vegetarian? Are you going to be a vegan? Are you going to be a carnivore, only eat meats? Or are you going to be an omnivore, eat everything? God doesn't care what kind of a diet you have. Are you going to honor a day or not honor a day? You know, for us, that might be, are we going to honor and celebrate secular holidays? Or are we going to honor federal holidays? Are we going to observe the 4th of July and celebrate that? Are we going to celebrate birthdays or anniversaries? God doesn't care whether or not you do those things. He is indifferent about those matters. And so in those areas, I get to make a personal choice for myself. However, in these areas, the gray area, neither the strong nor the weak, the one who is more restrictive nor the one who is less restrictive, is allowed to judge the other. We are both told in this section, whether you're the strong or the weak, that you have to maintain a good attitude towards others, towards your brethren. And multiple times he specifically tells us, do not judge one another. There in verse 1, he says, you who are strong, you who are less restrictive, accept the one who's more restrictive in their faith, but not for the purpose of passing judgment on his opinions. Don't declare that his judgment is wrong because he wants to eat vegetables only, that he's not right with God because he's a vegetarian. And likewise, in verse 3, he says, the one who does not eat, that is the more restrictive, well, you're not to tell the one who eats, you're not right with God. Why? Because God has accepted him. And so, we're not to judge one another when our personal judgments on these issues differ from one another. And clearly that's what Paul is talking about here. The words that are translated as judgment or judge here bear a technical legal sense in which it's the idea to pronounce an opinion about something being either right or wrong, declaring that it's either right or wrong. And Paul says, don't do that. And notice additionally in verse 3, whereas both the strong and the weak are prohibited from judging one another, saying that the other one is wrong in these matters, he also tells the stronger brother in verse 3, the one who eats, do not regard with contempt the one who does not eat. The idea here of looking with contempt or regarding with contempt is the idea of looking upon that individual as though they are nothing, that they are of no importance simply because they disagree with you or see things a little bit differently, that what he thinks, what he feels, what his conscience tells him that he must do, that that doesn't matter at all. Paul says, don't look at them that way. Certainly don't allow yourself to get to the point where you despise him because he holds opinions or convictions that are stricter than your own in these gray areas. And I would suggest to you that both are prohibited from thinking negatively about one another here in this text. And arguably, I will admit this, it's easier to maintain the right attitude towards somebody else if you find yourself in the, quote, stronger position. That is, if you're willing to do more than somebody else, it's easier for you to maintain the right attitude towards the one who does less. Because you simply say, okay, you don't want to do everything that I'm doing? You want to do less? More power to you. That's fine with me. You don't have to. The more difficult position is to be in the weaker position. Because there, we have to say and look and think and talk about our brethren who are willing to do things that our conscience won't allow us to do. We feel restricted in our conscience. I can't do that thing. If I did that thing, I think I would be wrong with God. But I recognize it's okay and you can do it. And I'll be okay with you. That's a lot more difficult to maintain that attitude. Which is why, again, Paul tells those brethren, don't judge one who's willing to do more than you in these matters of liberty. Even though it's difficult, I would suggest to you that it is possible. I'll give you two real quick illustrations. One is regarding the head covering. I know some brothers and sisters in Christ who feel very strongly that they have to wear a covering, specifically women feeling like they have to wear a covering in worship. And yet they can sit right next to a sister in Christ who does not feel she needs to wear a covering and be totally fine with that. They would feel if they took it off, they would be in error, they would be in sin. But they can sit next to somebody who does not hold that same restrictive conviction and say, even though I have to do it, I don't feel that you have to. I've seen the same thing happen with issues like the second serving of the Lord's Supper. This is one where I find myself in the weaker position. I'm much more restrictive in this area. I could never, with a good conscience, partake of a second serving of the Lord's Supper on a Sunday evening. And yet, I've been a part of congregations and churches where that's happened. And I've seen brethren do that. And even though if I were to do it, I would feel like I'm doing something unauthorized. I can sit back and say, you know what? I'm okay with you doing that. That's your judgment. As long as I'm not forced to participate in it myself. And so it is possible to maintain these good, right, positive, non-judgmental attitudes towards our brethren, even in these areas where we don't necessarily see eye to eye and God has given us liberty to make our own judgments. But it's when we judge the other brother or sister as wrong before God because they choose differently than I have chosen, that's when we begin to run into problems. That's when tensions rise. That's when feelings get hurt. That's when disputes and arguments crop up among brethren and lines of fellowship are arbitrarily drawn that don't have to be there. That's when relationships are harmed. And so we need to be careful not to judge one another. But it's not just important that we maintain these non-judgmental attitudes toward one another so that we can all get along. The real reason we're not to judge one another here in this text is because it's not our place. We aren't the judge in these matters. Notice again what Paul said in verse 4. Who are you to judge the servant of another? To his own master he will stand or fall, and he will stand because his master, the Lord, his judge, will make him stand. And again, in verses 10 through 12, he says, who are you to judge your brother? Or you again to regard your brother with contempt? We don't stand before one another's judgment seat. You don't give an answer to me for these matters. Rather, we all stand before the judgment seat of God. In these matters that Paul is discussing here, God has left it up to us individually to make personal decisions for ourselves. The one who eats, he's right with God. The one who doesn't eat, guess what? He's also right with God. The one who honors a day, he's right with God. The one who sees every day as the same, he's right with God. The thing about this that we need to understand, guys, is that when it comes to this gray area, we are within our rights. It is our position. We are in our position when we judge for ourselves what we are going to do. But we're not in a position to judge others as being wrong, that is, in sin, simply because they don't agree with my opinion, with my personal judgment about this matter. Now, be sure, there's nothing wrong with holding ourselves to a stricter standard, to be more restrictive in our practice, in our behavior. In fact, sometimes that may actually, arguably, be the safer position to stand in. But when we look down on others who are less restrictive than ourselves, who are willing to do more than what we are willing to do, are we not violating this instruction here that Paul gives? But let me suggest to you that it gets worse than that. Notice this passage in James chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. Here, James says, do not speak against one another, brethren. He who speaks against a brother or judges his brother speaks against the law and judges the law. But if you judge the law, you're not a doer of the law, but a judge of it. There is only one lawgiver and judge, the one who is able to save and destroy. But who are you to judge your neighbor? Here, James is sternly reminding us that we're not the lawgiver. We're not the one who determines right and wrong. We're not the judge. We don't make the rules. God makes the rules. He is the one who is in charge. He's the one, as James says, who rewards and punishes. And certainly as long as we're trying to live up to God's law, the law of liberty, as he describes it in chapter 1, verse 25, or the law of our king, chapter 2 and verse 8 that we looked at in Bible class this morning, we will do well. And even when we're seeking to try to help our brethren live up to God's standard, that's something that's pleasing to God. He'll say in chapter 5, verses 19 and 20, my brethren, if any among you strays from the truth and one turns him back, let him know that he who turns a sinner from the error of his way will save his soul from death and will cover a multitude of sins. When we see someone clearly violating God's law and we reach out to them in an effort to discipline, to rebuke, to hold them to God's standard, to bring them back to the Lord, that's something that's pleasing to God. But the problem arises when we start to judge others not on the basis of God's law or God's standard, but rather on the basis of my personal standard. What I want, what I think, what I desire, what I would do in that situation. What my rule is, what my standard is. And we need to understand that when we do this, we've elevated ourselves to a place where we simply do not belong. The idea here in verse 11 of speaking against a brother, which will be repeated about speaking against the law, is really the idea of slandering someone, to condemn them or their actions, to speak evil of what they're doing in such a way that says they are evil and wicked. We're saying that speaking against them. The problem here in this text is not because we're saying that they have clearly violated God's law, and so we're calling attention to that. But rather, it's because I say that you're wrong. Because you violated not God's rules, but my rules. And brethren, we need to understand that when we do this, we're not just speaking against a brother. We're not just slandering and speaking evil of one of our fellow saints. We're also slandering the law of God. That is, we are condemning God's law and saying it is wrong. By holding others to my standard rather than God's standard, in effect, what I'm saying is, I don't think God knew what he was talking about here. I don't think God's law is right, or at the very least, I don't think God's law is sufficient enough. It needs to be improved upon. It needs to be supplemented. Or maybe it just needs to be replaced by my law, by my standard. And when I start making my personal rules the rules, I've overstepped and I've overreached my proper sphere of jurisdiction. And that is a place where we simply do not want to be. What I've done is I've actually set myself above God. I think this is a principle that not many brethren really truly grasp. When I pass judgment against you in an area where God has granted liberty, I'm not just judging you. I'm judging the law of God, and I'm judging God. I'm saying I know better than God. And all throughout the third and fourth chapter of James, James has been warning the brethren, be careful that you don't put yourself in the position of God. When I say, I know better than you, God, I've stepped into a place that belongs only to him. I've set myself above the lawgiver, above the real king. And so James says, be careful. Remember who you are and what your right place is. You dare not usurp the authority or the place or the throne of God, for he is the one, the only one, who's able to both save and destroy. And who are we? Well, the implication of his question, but who are you to judge your neighbor? I'm nobody. If anything, I am a subject of the king, a fellow subject with my brethren, and I therefore need to make sure that I behave and conduct myself as such. So don't elevate yourself above the law of God, but rather submit yourself to him and to his law. And that includes, guys, not passing judgment against one another in areas where God has granted liberty. This is essentially what Jesus is saying in Matthew chapter 7, verses 1 and 2. When he says there, judge not that you be not judged, for in the way you judge, you will be judged, and by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. You know, there is a sense in which as Christians, as a church family, as a spiritual family, we are to look out for the benefit of one another. And from time to time, that may mean that as I'm looking at you, I might say, you're getting ready to go off over here and do something that God clearly has said is wrong. God said, we can't do that. And so I might go to you and I say, come back over here. Let's get back where it's safe. And so there's a sense in which we need to kind of keep our eyes peeled for one another to watch out for those dangers. But there's a difference, brethren, in looking out for the good of one another and looking out to find the faults in one another. When we look upon one another's actions in such with such a critical eye, maybe even hoping that we'll find something wrong, something juicy that I can come down on you about, that I can correct you, or I can reprove you, or I can point it out to you. We're being hypercritical. And that's what Jesus is prohibiting here in this text. When he says, do not judge so that you'll not be judged, he's saying, be careful that you don't become hypercritical in your judgment of one another. He made the observation earlier in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 7, blessed are those who are merciful, for they shall receive mercy. Well, mercy is reserved for those who are merciful. If I'm so hypercritical of others that I'm unwilling to extend any kind of mercy, I can expect to receive no mercy. Jesus said in Matthew chapter 6, verses 14 and 15, that we are to forgive others if we hope to be forgiven by God. And that if we don't forgive others, God will not forgive us our trespasses. And so forgiveness is reserved for those who are forgiven. If I'm so critical of others that I'm unwilling to forgive them of their faults, well, I can expect to receive no forgiveness from God. And if I become so nitpicky about inconsequential matters, judging others in these gray areas, well, I can expect to receive the same from God at Judgment Day. But I would suggest to you, Jesus' teaching here, do not judge so that you'll not be judged, for in the way you judge, you will be judged, and by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you. I think it goes beyond even just the gray areas. I think it extends, or at least covers, the category of inconsequential matters. You know, sometimes we can be so nitpicky about one another over stupid stuff. You may not like somebody's hairstyle. Who cares? Those are inconsequential things. You might think you got the best insurance agent out there, and anybody who doesn't have him is losing out. But that doesn't mean that you get to call other people stupid because they go with a different agent. Where you choose to live. You're going to live in town, out of town? You live in Canton, you're going to live in Peoria, you live out in the country. What does that matter, ultimately? When you go on vacation, whether you even go on a vacation, what kind of diet and exercise regimen you follow, what kind of hobbies you have, how many kids are you going to have, what holidays are you as a family going to choose to celebrate? And the list could go on and on. The point that I'm trying to make is that there are some things you do that just aren't worth worrying myself about. It really isn't my business. And honestly, I don't get to have a say in those decisions that you make. And guess what? I'm going to have to learn to be okay with that, because I'm not your judge. That's not my place. So, as we wrap up our discussion on this topic, I want to admonish us, encourage us to be careful whenever we judge one another. Before I declare that you are in sin, that you are not right with God, I better be sure that that's something about which God has clearly spoken. It can't just be because, well, I don't know, you're not doing it the way I think it ought to be done, therefore you're in sin. No. I need to be sure. And in the gray areas, the matters of personal judgment, I better refrain from passing judgment over that which God has granted liberty. Because, guys, just as important as it is to be careful that we don't loose what God has bound, it's just as important that we're careful not to bind what God has loosed. And as I think about this whole topic, let me close by making a final note. I see a principle active in Scripture. It seems to me that when God tells us over and over and over again about something, and he does this with more than, by the way, this topic of judging one another, But when he's consistently saying, make sure you do this, make sure you do that. Oh yeah, remember, make sure you do that. When he's constantly repeating himself and warning us and giving us instructions about a specific thing, it's probably a good indication that he knew that that was going to be something we would struggle with. And so the fact that he over and over again explicitly tells us, do not judge one another. Don't judge. Don't pass judgment against one another. I think that that means God knew that that was going to be something we were going to struggle with. And so instead of clinging on to the one passage that says judge one another as justification for maintaining these attitudes, let's look at the overwhelming and hear and listen to the overwhelming warnings against judging one another and actually try to do that instead. So, as we think about this very important topic, recognizing that it is an area in which we struggle as human beings, let us exercise caution and care in our judging of others.